Siren 107.3.
Visit us at sirenonline.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to Word Perfect, Siren's only poetry and literature show. I'm your host, Samantha Moore, and in the studio today I have Shirley Bell and Steve Court. Hello to you both.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good.
Yeah. Very good. Could you tell me a little bit about what you're here to talk to the listeners about today?
Right, well, I want to talk about where we've got to with Inspired magazine and the website, and remind people how to submit work, and also to talk about how the magazine will feed into a print anthology later in the year.
Okay.
And I think Steve is going to talk about how to submit plays and play scripts to us, and also about the publishing arm of Inspired, and then a little bit about the Jolly Brewer, which sadly is coming to its last performance, mm-hmm. and where the future lies.
Very, very exciting. So if you are listening and you are a writer, or you'd like to get into writing poetry, performing, then you really need to listen to this show, because there'll be lots of tips on how to get involved. And we're going to start with Summer Sun by Texas. Why have you chosen this song?
Well, I think the Summer Sun speaks for itself. It's a glorious day outside again today. Mm-hmm. And Texas, because it's a tenuous link that leads into the poetry that I'm going to read afterwards from one of the poets who submitted to the magazine already, a lady called Linda Imbler, who is from Texas.
We like tenuous links.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're the best links.
Okay, so Texas Summer Sun.
Take my heart.
So this is a couple of short poems by Linda Imbler, who is one of the writers who has submitted to Impspired so far. I'm going to read a couple of poems by her now, and then I'm going to hand over to Shirley, who will tell you how you could submit your work to us as well. So these are by Linda Imbler, who is a poet from Texas, who has published quite a lot of her work already. So we're really pleased that she's obviously wanted to be part of Impspired. And this first poem is called Chicanery's Bloom. A serpentine curve in the road, added by design. Tree trunk from straight to lean. Magnificently coloured roses grow along the curve of the drive. The turn of events sometimes turns sharp. It's easy to be thrown aside, but better to be solo than in bad company. So enjoy how unlonely being alone can be. The law of majority and the minority will chew through you and poke like the thorns in those roses. And this is the second piece that she submitted to us, called Dogs of War Conquered. So great that you could overcome that which you thought you couldn't, your internal dogs of war. While others raged on, you decided to watch their actions without heeding their shrill bark of words, and the truth became exposed. You had the wisdom to know when to walk away, and you did so with head held high, using the most considerable dignity that could be summoned. Now, use your newfound freedom, my friend, freedom to sit in that chair by your open window and drink your tea and hear silence. At least you think I am not taking you seriously. I well know the price you paid to get here. Thank you. So two poems by Linda Imbler. And Shirley is now going to talk to you if you want to submit some work yourself to us about how you can go about doing that.
Right, well, Inspired magazine is well underway now. You can go and see it at inspired.com, and on the site there it will tell you everything you need to know about submitting your work. We like Word files headed with your name, so that they're easy to handle, because I started off by getting loads and loads of Word documents just called Poems for Inspired or Story for Inspired, and it was a bit of a job to find out whose was whose. Word is preferred. You could send a PDF. We also accept, as well as poetry, we accept fiction. We accept drama, which Steve will talk about later. Artwork and drawings, essays and reviews. So there's a widespread of things that we're looking for and would be excited to receive from you. We're also very keen to welcome the open mic community, which has a very strong part to play in poetry. And we would welcome submission of audio and or video files, which could go into a page on the magazine. So please think about submitting.
Brilliant. Thank you, both of you. We'll have the Boys of Summer, and then we're going to hear more about how to get involved. So we have lots of summer-themed songs at the moment. Steve, can you tell me a little bit about your background as an actor and a playwright?
I started life as an actor almost by accident. So I'd moved to Manchester when I first met my now wife. I'd moved to Manchester and I had no job, and sitting at the table next to us in a restaurant was two people talking about cancelling the play because someone had broken his leg, and I was currently unemployed, and that's pretty much the only thing I'd learned to do at sick form. So I jumped straight in on it and fell into kind of professional acting work. That then developed on into me becoming a director in a similar situation where a director failed to turn up to a rehearsal once that I was cast for, and so I sort of volunteered myself and became a theatre director. Excellent. So it sort of spiralled from there, and then we moved back to Lincolnshire when my first son was born, and realised that it was kind of professional suicide because there is no professional theatre work in Lincoln. So then I thought, well, I've been a director and I've been an actor, I've seen lots of stories, why don't I try writing one of my own, and then I can keep that work going. So I started writing plays, which is, or at the time, was singularly the most lonely process I'd ever been through, and I didn't realise how painful it was for a writer. So we created the Lincoln Creative Writers Group, just so I could try and get playwrights together and kind of share that misery and that lonely once a month. once a month, come together.
Do you have that as your logo?
That's the strap line for the writers group. Yeah, come share your misery. We did that, and unfortunately now it's worked out really well for me, but at the time I didn't write poetry at all. Poetry was something that I was beat with a stick at school. You know, it was all World War One things about clouds in people's gardens, stuff that just didn't really interest me at all. And I didn't get it. I didn't know how to get it because it just never appealed to me. And everyone who turned up to my playwrights group was a poet. and they all wanted to sit there and just read me poetry, but I'd paid for the room, so I felt obliged to have to keep turning up every month. And that then spiraled into me kind of realizing that actually it wasn't what I thought it was, and that most poetry was something a little bit more personal, or it could be funny, it had a story to be told. It became almost more like I suppose it's when the spoken word thing kicked in, I realized that it could be like an actor's monologue. It was just storytelling in a different way than I'd already been telling stories. And so I kind of latched onto it, and then fairly quickly I was off on circuits touring around and performing and getting to go all over the world and do amazing things. So it was a really important thing, which brings me now full circle that I'm back into this. It led on to the spoken word nights in Lincoln sort of springing up, because I suddenly realised there was nowhere to go with that. And I wanted to perform. I wanted to get those words up on stage, and that became almost more important to me. I was writing things for people to hear it rather than for them to read it. But now I'm going through things. It becomes apparent that there's a lot of people especially in Lincoln, where we are at the moment, there's a lot of people who are phenomenal writers, but they write for the page. They don't write for the stage.
Yes.
And so Inspired is a great way for them to then be able to showcase their work as well.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that was important to me when we did this was that it was twofold, really, was that it was quality, but it was quality in a slightly different way to a lot of literary journals. A lot of literary journals become a bit pretentious.
Very academic.
Very academic. So it's all about it being perfectly constructed poetry that doesn't say anything. And there's no voice, there's no impact on it. It's just a comma has been used incredibly well throughout the entire piece. And that doesn't appeal to me in any way whatsoever. So when myself and Shirley were first talking, we said it's got to be about quality. It's got to be about us finding somebody who's got something to say. And there has to be that element of it being written well, in terms of, especially if it's on the page, you've got to be able to read it and get what the writer is saying. But we're not as hung up on it being these immaculately constructed things. We want it to be about just quality writing. And that, for me, is about where the playwright stuff comes in as well, because there are so many amazing plays that are written by people that never see the light of day and never get a chance to be aired or to see anything. And so we want to welcome people to submit some of those extracts of those play scripts. Obviously, we'd have to have a 14,000 page book if we were going to put an entire play selections in there. So we are just looking for sort of, you know, 4 or 5 pages, sort of condensed writing from their play. And I've seen it, and we have seen it in other journals before. So one of the other things we want from them is we want a synopsis of the play, something that sets the scene to say this is kind of the themes or the overriding thing of what the play is about, and then a little paragraph that sort of sets the scene for the extract that you're about to read. Because again, you could take some of the greatest plays in the world ever, and if you just picked out 4 pages of it, it'll mean nothing.
Yes, so you need the synopsis.
So we need that thing that sort of sets the scene for it. So we're really, really keen to get that kind of work in from people. It's also exciting now we're talking about taking in these audio clips and the video clips of people as well, because, again, there are so many amazing performers that we want to give them an opportunity to put their work out there. And sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes spoken word aesthetically doesn't look very good on the page. Maybe if it's because it's been written in such a heavy rhythm, it doesn't always then translate very well on the page. One great example, I think, is one of my favourite poets in the world is a guy called Ash Dickinson. Absolutely brilliant poet, absolutely incredible performer, but he's so fast and he's so quick in the way that he writes that if he was to put it into a sort of a formal poetry sense of the way that he would lay his work out on the page, his book would be enormous just for the first poem that he does. So he writes it in a way where it's all condensed, and it's just all of the breaks are just sort of just a forward slash between words. So there's this massively condensed thing on the page which aesthetically doesn't look that great, but it's a phenomenal poem. And I think that's where just having that ability to hear somebody's words will be great as well.
How do you know whether you're more inclined to be a spoken word poet or a poet for the page, do you think?
Some of that, I think, is personality driven. So some people are... The thought of standing in front of a microphone, in front of a full room of people and reading their poetry would stop them writing. Mm. If you feel like that, you're definitely not a spoken word poet. But then other people, I think, need that little push to get out there, because we've had some people, especially around Lincoln, who, to begin with, fear of the mic was huge, and now they're like me, you can't get them off it.
Yeah. Shirley, I've got a question for you.
Right.
What's the difference in terms of the writing between a spoken word poem and a poem for the page? So how do you know whether you should be performing it or whether it should just be...
I think there are some poems that cross over and will look good on the page and also will read well as a spoken word thing. But on the whole, the spoken word is much more rapid, condensed, gestural, rhythmic, and often that doesn't translate so well. Also, poetry for the page, it's often got something not exactly coded, but there's often
hidden meaning.
Quite a lot of hidden meaning which you've got to work at, and that's quite legitimate as part of poetry. I there is a sort of mock feud between the two worlds. And I think
it seems to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I think the two worlds can happily coexist. And there's a centre point where they overlap. But they're equally valid. And if spoken word poets also want to send the words to the poems as a document, as well as sending the clips, we're very happy to look at that and also put that in if Steve and I both agree.
Yes, excellent. So whatever kind of writer you are, there's an opportunity for you here. You've chosen this song, Scars, by Elliot Morris. Shirley, why have you chosen this song?
Well, it's a bit of a tangent, really, but the next poem that's going to be read is called At the Dialysis Unit. So it's
we love the tenuous link.
Yeah, another tenuous link. It's brilliant.
Told you, the best kind of link, always.
Okay, this is Scars by Elliot Morris.
So get back up and dust yourself down. And never stop standing your ground. So let it bruise and let it breathe. Something like this will make you see that it's alright to feel like you'll never heal. Just hold on to scars. They may
was a time when I was alone, nowhere to go and no place to call home. My only friend was the man in the moon, and even sometimes he would go away too. Then one night as I closed my eyes, I saw a shadow flying high. He came to me with the sweetest smile, told me he wanted to talk for a while. He said, Peter Pan, that's what they call me. I promise that you'll never be lonely. And ever since that day, I am a lost boy from Neverland, usually hanging out with Peter Pan. And when we're bored, we play in the woods, always on the run from Captain Hook. Run, run, lost boy, they say to me, away from all of reality. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free. He sprinkled me in pixie dust and told me to believe, believe in him and believe in me. Together we will fly away in a cloud of green to your beautiful destiny. As we soared above the town that never loved me, I realized I finally had a family. Soon enough we reached Neverland. Peacefully my feet hit the sand, and ever since that day, I am a lost boy from Neverland, usually hanging out with Peter Pan. And when we're bored, we play in the woods, always on the run from Captain Hook. Run, run, lost boy, they say to me, away from all of reality. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free. Peter Pan, Tinkerbell, Wendy, darling, even Captain Hook, you are my perfect storybook. Neverland, I love you so, you are now my home sweet home forever, a lost boy at last. And for always I will say, I am a lost boy from Neverland, usually hanging out with Peter Pan. And when we're bored, we play in the woods, always on the run from Captain Hook. Run, run, lost boy, they say to me, away from all of reality. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free.
That was Scars by Elliot Morris and Lost Boy by Ruth B. Shirley, you have a poem for us from the Impspired anthology, the first edition, am I correct?
Yes, that's right. This is called At the Dialysis Unit, and I think you'll get a feeling throughout this programme of the variety of work that we are looking for. So, you know, please feel encouraged to submit work to us. At the Dialysis Unit, that scarlet ribbon winds from elbow bend down around, pulsating as lifeblood makes its march to the outside and in again and again. This ritual, this arcane assemblage, these machines of loving grace, their smiling screens, bland blue bodies, low kindly hum that ceaselessly swallow, digest, recycle blood, march it onward and roundward, onward and roundward. We sit beside his bed, talk quietly of family on holiday, the ward's acquaintances, the surprise of spring snow. But I can glance only sidelong at the red life thread winding from the elbow bend where a portal of pleated flesh has been made for it. My eyes will not follow the purifying journey down and around. Look up while swirls like a murmuration. Look down, red, glides like a plain chant, down and around between the stone columns of resistance, of hanging on that will not let him die. And the line in there, which is Machines of Loving Grace, is actually a quotation from Richard Branigan, All Watched Over By. I want to carry on talking about the magazine and how it will eventually be archived into print form. Apart from art and drawings, the section there, I'm afraid some of the colour probably wouldn't work in the black and white of the anthology. But if drawings are submitted in grayscale or black and white, they'll certainly be considered. And also I'd like our artists to think about submitting covers, which would be 10 by 8 landscape format with probably a half inch in the centre for the margin on the back of the book. And ideally to have a sort of blankish space in the top right-hand corner for the typescript. But that would be brilliant. So the first issue, Magazine One, is out this September, October. This has been up on the site as a preview, so you can actually see the bones of the magazine, although it's still being constructed. And I think people can get a very good idea of what it's all about. But it does basically depend on people responding to it and submitting to it and reading it and enjoying it. So I hope as many people will submit as possible. the first two issues, that's September, October, is issue one. November, December is issue two. They're going to be compiled into an anthology of all the work, and that will be in print, and that will be available to buy either on the site or on Amazon. And in that way, you don't just have the pleasure of seeing your work on the web, although it is, the website is supposed to function very much like a magazine, and the menus are arranged so that you can go to individual poets and individual fiction writers and go through the work that way. But also you've got the archival sense of a thing being in print. And I think being able to hold a weighty book is very rewarding. So we're going to have this several times a year, and it will anthologise all the poets' work.
I think there's something in that, isn't there? It's we're used to seeing, if we're published writers already, we're used to seeing it on the screen, but actually seeing it in print and holding it and showing other people, there's something much more magical about that, I think.
That's right, and passing a book around.
Yes,
and being able to see, look, this is me. And,
something very special about that. It's a great opportunity.
Yes.
Also for new writers, what advice would you, actually both of you can chip in on this, Steve, what advice would you give to people who haven't been published before, who are just emerging writers, who fancy giving it a go?
I think there's a perception that needs to be broken with writers at the minute, and that is that we don't live in the world that we lived in 10 years ago where, you know, if 1,000 people were writing, one of them was going to have their work published. I think there's now so many avenues, there's so many routes that you can go to be published and to have your work published in that sort of sense. I think there's to just write, to submit it. And people hang off at the amount of people that you meet who've got such incredible work who've been too scared to send it anywhere.
Yeah.
And just to realise that if you send your work to somebody and they don't publish it, what do you lose? Absolutely nothing. But they might publish it. And that might also then be the springboard to somebody else reading it, and then you get your first book and then it just snowballs into something else. So just do it.
Just do it.
And also a lot of, and we're trying to be the same here. It's difficult if you get huge volumes of submissions, but what we're trying to do is if for any reason we have to reject anybody's work, I know personally, I'm sure Shirley's the same, is I wouldn't just say no. I'd say no, and I'd tell you why. I'd tell you what it is that maybe about it isn't quite finished, isn't quite right, where it's maybe missing the mark a little bit. And that in itself can be more valuable than somebody publishing your poem, because then you know where to go to make some improvements. So actually it's a good opportunity to just get that feedback from people.
And also, are you serious about your writing? Because if you can't take constructive feedback from someone who is a professional writer, I think you need to take another look at why you're doing it.
Yeah, it's a really funny thing, because writers have probably got the thinnest skins.
Yeah.
But they need the thickest skins because
they need that feedback.
Yeah, and also, just because one editor doesn't like your work, it doesn't mean that it won't be liked somewhere else.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, we have got the fail-safe that more than one person reads everything.
Yes.
So there's a consensus on quality. And I think that helps to keep an even keel and a spread of taste. But what I always say if I turn somebody down is, you know, there was much to like.
Mm.
Or I'll say, you know, please do submit again. You know, there were things of interest. So
what would you both say to somebody who said, the poem came to me? It was a gift. It was given to me from the spiritual realm. Because I have heard that before. I'm not changing my poem because it was a gift. It was given to me.
Well, that's how I write. No, I think that's people underplaying themselves most of the time. I think that actually, yes, inspiration comes to people from all over the place, and you'll hear one word and that inspires a whole story. I can't remember now, but it's the things that led Tolkien to write in Lord of the Rings was actually very real, very practical things that he'd experienced in his life that becomes this incredible fantasy story. So I think inspiration will come to people from all over the place, but give yourself a little bit of credit.
Yeah, good.
You have to have skill to then convert that onto the page for somebody else to read and enjoy it. So, you know, take a bit of pride in the fact that you wrote it.
And that is the point, actually, that the thing that first comes to you, because I think everybody, when they first write, they're brainstorming things.
Yeah, yeah.
So what they've got is this big thing. And that is where you come in to be your own editor and cut it down and make it into the best possible version of that piece that you've written. Mm. If you just like flop it out there, you might have redundant words, you might have inappropriate adjectives, it might read badly from one line. If you don't look at it and read it over and read it aloud, how would you ever know that?
Somebody once gave a great definition of what being a writer was. I went to a writer's retreat down in London, and there's about 60 of us in a room, and somebody said, right, you've got two sentences you have to describe: being a writer and being a poet. And this was, some incredible writers were there. I mean, they surpassed me by five, sat in the corner and felt ashamed. Right? But they, and one of the ones that came out of it was that a writer puts the right words in the right order, whereas a poet puts the best words in the best order.
Oh.
And I think that's a great... But in doing that, like I say, you can have an idea for a story, you can have an idea for a poem, but only a writer will actually be able to then convert that idea into something that's readable. And I think the people who say, it came to me, it probably did, but you wrote it down.
Yeah.
And it's yours to alter and improve. So
own it.
Own it and shape it and improve it.
Okay, brilliant. Well, we're going to have a bit of Bob Dylan, Got to Serve Somebody. Bob was a bit of a writer, wasn't he? A bit of a prophet.
Well, he was a poet, wasn't he? He said he only went into music because his poetry wasn't selling. Yeah.
Is that right? Well, yeah. So, Got to Serve Somebody.
To England or France, you may like You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Maybe a rock and roll addict prancing on the stage, money, drugs at your command, women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor or they may call you chief. You're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are. You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
You may be a state trooper, it may be a young Turk, maybe the head of some bigger TV network. You may be rich or poor, you may be blind or lame, maybe living in another country under another name, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Working on a home. Might be living in a mansion. You might live in a dome. You may own guns and you may even own tanks. You may be somebody's landlord. You may even own banks. But you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve
yes,
somebody.
You're gonna have to serve somebody. You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
You may be a preacher, preacher, spiritual pride. Maybe a city councilman taking bribes on the side. Maybe working in a barber shop, you may know how to cut hair. And maybe somebody's mistress, maybe somebody's heir. But you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Might like to wear cotton, might like to wear silk, might like to drink whiskey, might like to drink milk. Might like to eat caviar, you might like to eat bread. Maybe sleeping on the floor, sleeping in a king-size bed. But you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve
yes,
somebody.
Indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Bobby, or you may call me Zimmy. You may call me RJ. You may call me Ray. You may call me anything. No matter what you say, you're still gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Yes, you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil, and it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
Bob Dylan, Gotta Serve Somebody. Shirley, you have a poem for us.
Right, this is by Susie Garib. And it's about a refusal to serve anybody, which I thought was rather appropriate. Retreat. They speak of my retreat psychoanalytically as a regrettable condition to be confiscated, for I have persistently abstained from partaking of the secret knowledge of these self-ordained, fashionable dames who voice their oracles in street cafes in the glow of charcoal and hooker's haze. Sarsara's vermilion plumped-up lips do not at all match her hips. The augmented mounds of Rita's breasts are not as pointed as Gaza's pyramids. Mrs. Caffiani's sculpted cheeks will be bereft of kisses on peaks. Their husband's antlers exceed the height of the Eiffel Tower by a terrestrial mile. I had opted for silence far from the madding crowd. My horse gallops along Ivanhoe's from sunset. Like a monastic Gnostic, I am in pursuit of light, an academic anchorite. And now I think Steve's going to talk about our publishing arm.
Yeah, so one of the things we're looking to do as well is not just publish for the anthology or for the magazine, but actually give writers an opportunity to get a collection of their work together as well. So we're going to look at trying to put out some books. So we've worked with a couple of writers already that we're bringing their works together. So local writer Robbie Taylor, we've done a couple of pieces for him. We've got Stephen Meek, who's from kind of the Hull area, who's actually about to become BBC Radio Hull's Thought of the Day voice. So
oh,
he's
wow.
going to be writing for them as
Celebrity.
Well. So we've got his work that's coming together, which actually is a really nice collection of poetry. Michael Taylor, who's an ex-librarian from London, who's got some very interesting pieces in there. And then we've got Matt Spittles, who's another one of our own. So he's been going to the local writers group that I talked about at the beginning. He's been coming to that for probably about 5-6 yeah. maybe more years as well. So we've got a really nice piece. And they're all such a diverse group of writers. So Robbie's work, for example, he's got a short novel, and then he's got a selection of poetry which is set in his fictional place called Circus Town, which is kind of this rundown council estate, and all of the poems are set in this fictional universe of his, which is brilliant. And then you've got as a sort of a contrast to that, Matt Spittles, for example, all of his stuff, he's a great sort of outdoor orienteering kind of guy. So a lot of his is this reflection on nature and what he sees when he's out and about in the field. So they're so completely different. So there isn't really we're not looking for a thing. We're looking for just quality writing
quality
from people.
Right. You're not looking for any particular genre, but when you say quality, how would you define quality?
For me, it's about them having something to say. It's about it being interesting. I mean, I will read... Robbie is, again, a great example of some of the conflicts that we've had already in terms of exactly where we draw the line on these things, because he sits in a very unique world in that he describes this himself as being from the school of non-edit. So when you read the stuff that he writes, it literally is as the story came to him and as he wrote it down, and where the rest of us might then agonise for the next 2 years on... Mm-hmm. changing this bit of the story and tweaking that. The editing that he does is basically to make sure that grammatically and punctuation-wise it's readable.
Yeah, yeah.
But the story is so you get this really raw version of that's the story as he would have told you. It's as if you are sitting in a room with him while he tells you the story. So it doesn't change. He doesn't go back to make something a bit more exciting or to tweak something. It's that's the story as it comes out.
Yeah.
And it's just this really nice raw quality to it.
And then he can do that successfully. Oh, he's a genius at it.
He comes to the writers group with us, and in a 10-minute exercise, he'll write something that feels polished and finished, and I'm still trying to decide what the opening line might be. So he does have that ability to do these things. And then we've got other writers in there, let's say like Matt, who has poems in there that he's been working on for 3 or 4 years, and he's slowly tweaked and slowly evolved, and you know every word is precise and specific, and it all comes together in that nice way. So we're looking to put out work that I think has something to say. That's the main thing for us, is that I don't want the most academically perfect piece of writing that doesn't say anything. Because
it's the voice that's important.
It's the voice that's important. I think the reader has to read it and enjoy it. Otherwise, what are you reading for?
Yes. It has to have a purpose as well, doesn't it? It's not just about the writer's ego. It has to speak to people.
I think you get some people who become very skillful technically, but they've no longer got much they want to say. Or
the passion.
Yeah. Mm. And I think you want that back of the neck, you know, the hair standing up on the back of your neck. Something that, you know, like...
resonates.
Kind of hits you and there's a bit of a shock and, you know, you really sort of react to it.
That's certain. That special something.
Yeah.
When I was studying, doing the creative writing course, the lecturer said... it has to have the X factor if you want to get the top, you know, the top marks. Not that it's about marks, but I said, how do you get a distinction? He said, it has to have the X factor, and we can't describe what that is, but we know it when we see it. And I think it's that, yeah, you read it and the hairs on you, the back of your neck stand up, and it resonates with you.
The difficulty with that as well, and that's why I like the fact that we've got different perspectives in the way that we look at things and the things that we would choose to read, because I think you can have that X factor, but that X factor is never ever going to be something that will appeal to everybody, because it might be a poem that is, you know, the dialysis unit piece there. There's so many amazing lines in there if you've experienced something like that, that you would read that and you'd get that tingle and you'd get that flash of memory and you'd go, oh my God, that's exactly what it felt like.
Of
and
course.
If you've never been through that, you hear it and you go, yeah, it's well written, but you don't get the same buzz from it. So I think it's important that we've got these two, you know, two or three different opinions
responses
to look at it. So that actually when someone goes, I'm not sure, the other one goes, no, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible because
it resonates with me.
Yeah.
It means something to me. Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our show now. Is there anything else before I play the final song? Is there anything else that you'd like to tell the listeners about Impspired?
Just that it's an international magazine, but it's also a local magazine in the sense that we're from Lincoln and we want to encourage Lincoln-based writers to support us and to consider it as their magazine.
Yeah, to have some ownership over it as well. Steve, you wanted to talk about the Jolly Brewer.
Yeah, just very quickly, obviously it's a bit of a sad state of affairs at the moment, but the brewery is going to be ceasing trading shortly as the building's been sold, and it's a little bit up in the air as to exactly what that's going to become in the future. But we've been running the spoken word at the Jolly Brewer night for sort of 6.5 years, so this coming Thursday will be the last one, sadly. So if you've been part of that at any time in the past, or if you want to give it a go, well, you've got one chance left. So please come along. Let's give it a bit of a big send-off this coming Thursday.
And if you're listening to this after Thursday, do you know where the next venue will be? Have you got any ideas?
No, we're looking at a couple of places at the moment. There is going to be another one. It's going to have a little bit of a hiatus while we get that all set up and lined up. So it might be a couple of months before that launches, but there will be something to replace it. Potentially at the top of town as well. So we've got the Birdcage running that Ron Booth runs down the bottom end of the hill. So we're looking at potentially doing something more towards the top end of Lincoln as well.
Okay. So how can people get in touch with you if they want to know a bit more about
At the moment, lots of it goes up onto the Outspoken community page. So if you just go to Facebook and search for Outspoken Community, you can go on there. Otherwise, come to my house. If you don't know where I live, go to the Outspoken Community page.
There's the Birdcage. When's the Birdcage? We have to mention
Birdcage is on the first Wednesday of every month in the evening there, and the Jolly Brewer is the last Thursday of the month. The plan will hopefully be to keep the date the same so that we can keep that last Thursday night poetry thing going, but obviously that's going to depend on venues and where they can accommodate us.
Okay, well, thank you both of you very much for coming. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I hope people are inspired by this and they get writing and they get sending you stuff in, because it's a really exciting project. So thank you for coming in. We're going to play out with Panic at the Disco, 9 in the afternoon.
Just the way that we do when it's not in the afternoon.